Chapter 15. Blown. A steady drizzle set in after dark, the streets and sidewalks reflecting a light sheen from the street lamps and headlights of passing cars. Trace kept watch from the room's small balcony. He wore a heavy khaki jacket and stayed under an umbrella to keep up appearances. The wet and cold hardly registered as he surveyed the convention center through his nightscope. Everyone was in place, short-range microtransmitters in their ears keeping them in constant contact. By Cassandra's count, 8 dreads and 4 ghost packers had joined them in the modest concert hall that seated 3,000. Trace took it as a bad sign that the numbers sobered the cheery Corinth.
"Dude, this is bad," he said in a subdued voice just after Telemiren took the stage. "We're second row. But if they all decide to jump the stage, there's no way we can protect her against that many."
Tight security had forced Cassandra and Corinth to go without weapons, though Goldbow had everything assembled and at the ready in the back of the van. Trace had his disassembled BBSR and 2 Stingers in a backpack by the sliding glass door near his perch on the balcony. His BBG was tucked in a holster under his jacket, creating a very noticeable protrusion. To the right of the convention center, he could make out the minivan parked on the street. Goldbow sat inside, keeping watch on the parking garage. Tella had arrived in a black SUV at 6:30 p.m., and as the crowd streamed into the convention center, so did the dreads, mostly singly. They all agreed that happenstance hadn't brought that many of the depraved brutes to a Christian alternative concert. Had the dreads become bold enough to commit an atrocity so out in the open? Had the Ash Angels become too weak? 2 things bothered Trace as he kept vigil through the nightscope. The first was the vision that had brought them there. Tella, bound by duct tape and thrown into the back of a car, was clearly the warning. But what nagged at him like a burr in his sock was her phone glowing in the darkness of the trunk. Yes, it conveniently let them know what time it was, but it shouldn't have been there. Most Ash Angels didn't give Dreads a lot of credit in the intelligence and planning department, at least not until recently. But even the stupidest criminals were well aware that phones could be tracked by GPS. The Ash Angels had secured a handle on Tella's phone hours ago just for that reason. So why leave it in the trunk? Did she have it in a purse or pocket the Dreads would overlook during the kidnapping? The number of Dreads and possessed in the audience gnawed on him too. A lack of subtlety was the hallmark of Dreads in the past, but did it still apply? Unless they had managed to sneak guns past security, the amount of damage they could do was limited, and Tella's own personal security would likely extract her before even one could get a foot on the stage. Cassandra had speculated that they might try inciting the crowd, an evil gift similar to spirit shock, but Trace couldn't see how it would do any good. A rowdy crowd would just put her security people on alert. As 8 o'clock neared, Trace had convinced himself that the Dreads were playing them again, just as they had when they took Priscilla. He had to have more proof before he brought it up to Cassandra. His phone beeped. An Ash Angel named Chimes was on the line. He worked for Northwest Operations and had coordinated with them throughout the day.
"Trace, we've received word that Seattle PD has received a 911 call stating that a man is parked outside the convention center with a van full of weapons. They have a license plate and are mobilizing now. We're trying to work an intervention, but it will take some time."
Played indeed. Trace relayed the information to his team. Goldbow swore.
"I'm out."
Trace put his eyes to the scope. The minivan's headlights flicked on, and Goldbow pulled out into traffic. If the cops caught him, Cassandra's next mission would entail a visit to a federal lockup to spring Goldbow. So the Dreads knew they were there. But how much did they know? Goldbow was an easy mark with his white aura visible for every creature of evil to see. But Trace hadn't seen any Dreads or possessed on the street since the concert began, though they may have spotted Goldbow earlier.
"Looks like we're heading into an intermission after this song," Cassandra reported over a deafening round of applause. "You keep that scope on the garage, Jarhead. This is going south fast."
Through the open sliding glass door, he could hear the ding of the elevator as it arrived on the 9th floor, and he paused, taking his eyes off the scope and focusing on the door. Within seconds, someone knocked.
Room service.
Like he was going to fall for that. They're here, he said tersely. He shoved the small scope in his pocket and threw on the backpack, a chill running up his spine. Not all dreads could spirit shock, but if they torched him, he knew he was still too weak to resist.
Get out, Trace, Cassandra warned,
but he was already on his way. In the hours leading up to the concert, he had planned his escape route, though even to his own reckoning it was a little crazy. Hopping over the rail on the balcony, he lowered himself until he hung freely over the side, gripping the lower rung. Just as the door to room 902 burst in with a splintering crack, he let go, falling straight down and flaring his strength. Arms extended, he caught the rail of the balcony below, the metal whining under the weight of his inertia. In moments, he had hauled himself over onto the balcony of room 802 and made for the sliding glass door and the dark room behind it. The sliding door was locked, but with boosted strength, he was able to haul it upward and out of its track and barge through the empty room. Calmly, he stepped out into the hall and called the elevator, waiting for it to drop one floor. It was crucial that he appear normal, so he dug his phone out of his pocket and dialed Cassandra as the doors opened. Punching up the lobby on the elevator panel, he leaned casually against the wall.
Trace, she answered, you okay?
Hey, babes, he said enthusiastically. How's the concert?
Last song before intermission. Look, get to the safe house on 22nd. It's only 2 miles from here, and you can run it in 8 minutes. Goldbo should be on his way there now.
Trace thought for a moment. Would a safe house really be safe? The dreads were in their back pocket. The doors opened, and Trace strolled out of the elevator, unsurprised to find a dread wearing a leather jacket and Seahawks cap loitering just inside the main door.
Yeah, I sure wish I could be with you there. Sounds like a total party, Trace said, trying to remain cool.
His overweight backpack was the only liability in his appearance, unless the dreads actually knew whom to look for.
You out of the hotel yet?
A young couple from outside was heading toward the automatic doors with luggage hanging off every appendage. The dread, also on his phone, turned to look Trace over as he approached.
Nah, the room I got is totally sweet. You have to come over and check it out.
I'll make it worth your while, he said as suggestively as possible. And then he was through, jostling with the couple and their luggage on the way by.
I'm going to be sick, Cassandra said.
Horrible weather out here, he commented, but after an abrupt right turn, he set out at a jog that wouldn't seem unusual for someone who didn't like the rain.
I'm out, he said, hanging up the phone.
Good, she replied over the earpiece, sounding relieved. Get to 22nd Street now. There's a chapel there. You get torched on the way and I won't be able to do anything about it this time.
Trace's mind churned as he reached the intersection and waited for the light to change, grateful for the handful of pedestrians to blend in with. If the dreads were planning to hit Tella inside the building, and if they were already inside, why bother to take out the recon units that had already seen them go in? In the event of a quick strike while Tella was on stage, their van full of weapons outside wouldn't help, but the dreads had managed to get rid of it anyway. A couple of cop cars, presumably those dispatched to find Goldbo, passed through the light, driving slowly around the perimeter of the convention center. Trace crossed the road, prepared to turn left toward 22nd Street. Then he stopped. There were two possibilities for the dreads' actions. They either wanted to cover their retreat after the hit, or wanted to get Tella out of the building without interference. But capturing a pop star during a concert? They would have a mountain of security and ash angels after them, regardless of whether he or Goldbo remained outside to see them drive past. It made no sense. Why not grab her at a quieter location later? The phone in the vision had to be the key. Trace turned right and set out at an even pace toward the parking garage entrance. Then it all clicked. This was just like the Priscilla grab, a ruse intended to lure ash angels into a trap. The phone in the vision was left there deliberately so that Ash Angels could follow the dreads to a place of their choosing. Since Tella was a normal and an attuned, they could be sure she wouldn't be 44-2'd and abandoned like Priscilla. Ash Angels had to help normals. The dreads would take her, and the Ash Angels would follow her right to a killing floor by tracking the phone.
He might have figured it out, but it wouldn't help. He'd failed Tella just like he'd failed Teresa. He just wasn't man enough to get the job done. It'd be better if Goldbo came back. Trace pulled himself up short. Where had those thoughts come from? He forced himself to keep walking down the slight incline toward the entrance of the parking garage, feeling the destructive creepers attaching to his thoughts. He pushed them away, but they lurked in his subconscious, waiting to grab him. Was he being torched? An SUV passed him from behind on the other side of the street, and the impulse to sink into despair nearly overcame him. By the auras glowing dully behind tinted glass, he guessed that two dreads occupied the front. But something else, something he could feel more than see, waited behind the second window. Vexus, as black as the deepest hole, leaked out of the car in wispy tendrils. A shed. Cassandra, this just got worse, Trace warned as the SUV pulled into the parking garage at a fast clip. An SUV with a shed just pulled into the parking garage.
Dude, are you sure?
Corinth exclaimed, tone nervous. Yes, Trace answered.
We're screwed, Cassandra lamented. We don't have a sanctified relic. Get as far from here as you can, Jarhead. Just being around a shed is like being torched. This is bigger than we thought.
But it all made sense. Shadim could use the darkness from which they were made to appear and act as anyone. How did you get a pop star out of her own concert? You replaced her during intermission. Cassandra, do a dread count, Trace ordered.
Jarhead, I said,
just do it.
He resumed his jog, crossing into the parking garage and scanning for signs pointing to the exit. It was two levels down and on the other side. He broke into a sprint, concrete columns whipping by, backpack bouncing hard against his back.
There are seven, but it's intermission. The other could be loitering around, Cassandra reported.
No, Trace disagreed. They are taking her right now. Is there any way you can get backstage and find her?
We'll see what we can do, she said.
It's a shed, Corinth interjected, voice strained. We're both dead if we go back there.
We have to try, Corinth. You'd better be heading to the safe house, Jarhead, Cassandra said, voice strict. Jarhead, where are you?
He continued his descent down the winding ramp while she swore at him in the earpiece. As he rounded the last bend and emerged into the packed parking structure, he pulled the earpiece out and shoved it in his pocket. He needed to concentrate. From somewhere farther in, faint voices echoed among all the cars and concrete. Behind him, a gentle upward slope led out to the street. Unsure how to proceed, he followed the sound of the voices, walking at a quick pace and trying to seem casual at the same time. As he passed a tall pickup truck, his peripheral vision caught a red aura to his left. He crouched and pulled the compact scope from his pocket, inching upward until he could see through the windows of a red Ford Focus. A skinny, weasel-faced dread smoking a cigarette leaned against a gray sedan. A service door closed as whomever he was talking with left. The now empty SUV that had passed him on the street was parked nearby. The sedan's engine idled noisily, a squeaky belt shrieking from time to time. The dread checked his phone and then popped the trunk with a key fob. After a look over his shoulder, he rearranged a couple of duffel bags, shoving them to the back. This was it. Trace crouched back down, assessing his options. He had a disassembled sniper rifle in his backpack, but even if he could put it together and take the dread out without getting caught, the dread's companions might off Tella immediately if they thought their plan was busted. A firefight in a parking garage would get ugly fast. But if they did intend to use Tella as bait, he couldn't let that sedan out of the garage in possession of the dreads. He knew what he had to do. Thankful the garage was devoid of onlookers, Trace continued forward at a crouch, staying out of the dread's line of sight and getting as close as he could without inviting notice. The service door banged open as he passed one of the circular concrete pillars, and he stopped, grabbing his scope and peering around the side. Two dreads dressed as concert security emerged from the door, carrying an unconscious Tella bound with duct tape, as the vision had foretold. The driver motioned them over urgently. Another man, darkly complexioned and wearing an expensive suit, held the door open.
He was not a dread. A normal accomplice?
Trace took a picture with the scope's built-in camera as the dreads threw Tella unceremoniously into the trunk. They were about to close it when the man in the suit held them up, digging a cell phone out of his pocket and tossing it in. Closing the trunk, the three dreads and the man consulted for a moment, the non-dread surprisingly seeming in charge of the others. After a few seconds, all four walked inside the door. Now was his chance. Trace started out at a dead run, but as he neared the car, the door to the convention center opened a crack, and he slowed abruptly and changed direction to make it appear as if he were heading parallel to the gray sedan. The Weasley driver was the only one who emerged, and he walked purposefully toward the car while taking a long drag on his cigarette.
"Got a light?" Trace improvised as he marched within 15 feet of the driver's side door.
The dread crossed in front of the car and flipped him off.
"Jerk."
Trace strode at the dread, pushing blood to his face to color it livid.
"You got a problem, man?" he yelled.
The dread ignored him and went to open the door. Trace boosted his strength. He grabbed the dread by the scuff of his jacket and the seat of his pants and hurled him as hard as he could into a nearby pillar. The satisfying crunch of bones snapping rewarded his efforts. Trace hopped in the car. A cell phone waited on the passenger side seat, and he threw it out as the slumped dread rose unsteadily. Trace whipped the door shut and hit the gas, clipping the dread and sending him hard into the pillar again. Wheels and loose belt squealing, he navigated out of the parking garage and into the rain. After cranking the defroster to fend the fog off his windshield, he grabbed his own phone out of his pocket. While stalled at a light, he flipped through a map until he found what he wanted. "Navigate here," he said, pressing the location.
"Calculating route," the phone said.
The light turned green with no sign of pursuit. It was 8:42 p.m., the time shown in the vision. He pulled the earpiece out of his pocket as he followed the instructions from his phone's navigation app.
"Cassandra," he said, "I've got her."
"What? I told you to—"
Yeah, listen. The dreads threw her in the trunk of a car, and I commandeered it. This has been a setup all along. They were baiting us with the phone, knowing we would track it. Look, get with Goldbow and tell him I'm heading to Springtree Cemetery, northeast of town."
"Why?" Cassandra asked. "You need to get her to a safe house. They can probably track the phone or the car."
"I'm counting on it. We can't take her to a safe house. This whole mission is compromised. They probably have the safe houses covered. Come as soon as you can."
Silence.
"Okay," she agreed. "We couldn't get backstage. The show is about to start back up again. I guess the shed's been practicing."
A thumping noise in the back startled him. Tella was kicking at the trunk. He pulled off the road and stopped the car. With angelic strength, he reached back and pulled the back seat away, exposing the trunk. Tella looked up, wide-eyed and frightened. Almost immediately, her expression turned from fearful to amazed.
"I saw them kidnap you," he explained calmly. "I hijacked the car from the man who took you. Scoot a little closer."
She wiggled forward enough for him to grab her arm. He pulled her toward the front and ripped the tape from her mouth and wrists.
"We've got to move. They'll be after us."
She was a thin brunette with green eyes and long wavy hair. She wore a form-fitting blue dress, and for someone recently abducted appeared remarkably at ease as she worked at the tape binding her ankles. Trace resumed driving. Moments later, she crawled into the front passenger seat and watched him intently for a few minutes.
"Who are you?" she asked, voice strange, excited, and awed.
Not the reaction he expected.
"Are you okay? Did you see who did this?"
She continued to stare at him.
"I was in my dressing room when two men, awful men, came in. One held me while the other covered my mouth and nose with something. Who are you?"
Trace had to think. Should he tell her his cover name? She was famous enough to make him a hero for the press, and he didn't want any attention. Despite all his recent research into the vagaries of Ash Angel Protocol, he wasn't sure how to handle this kind of situation. He settled on a mix of lies, cover story, and truth.
"Call me Hilo,"
he answered, using one of the Ash Angel names he had considered adopting upon graduation.
Hilo. Is that some kind of military thing?
Sort of, he said. Look, I know you must be scared to death right now. I promise I'm trying to keep you safe. She continued to stare at him as if she couldn't believe her eyes.
I know. I trust you. Did you know my father, Harvey Mirren?
Not really. She relaxed, turning her gaze back to the road.
You remind me of him.
Trace nodded, glad she wasn't trying to claw his eyes out and jump out of the car. She really was unattuned. He glanced at her. Perhaps dropping her off somewhere would be safer than taking her into what he hoped would turn into a fire zone. But something inside him said to stay with her, to keep her close. He didn't want to let her out of his sight until he knew the threat was over. His phone rang, and he picked it up from the console. Cassandra.
Yeah. Goldbow should be at the cemetery in 10. We'll be a little longer. Keep your earpiece in. When you hear from Goldbow or me, you'll know we're within 2 miles.
Great. Hurry.
Who was that? Tella asked.
Trace's mind sprinted. Trying to keep Tella in the dark was going to tax his meager creative powers. It was a friend of mine I called when I saw everything going down. She's going to bring some help. She cocked her head.
Shouldn't we call the police or something? Where's my phone? I should call my bodyguard.
She covered her mouth in horror.
Did they kill him?
I don't know, Tella. I doubt it, he reassured her. Hang in there. Don't call anyone yet. We're trying to get the people who did this to you out into the open so we can take care of things so this won't happen again.
So you're not just some good Samaritan?
She looked him over again.
Are you some sort of undercover security?
He smiled. That would actually be the best description. She reached out like she was going to touch his arm and then pulled it back.
Thank you, Hilo. Thank you for coming for me.
The rain softened as they crossed into the suburbs of the city, traffic thinning and walls of trees enclosing the roads. Tella shivered, and Trace fumbled at the controls to lend her a little heat. The splash of the tires on the wet road and the rhythmic cadence of the windshield wipers filled the silence as questions and doubts filled his mind. Another mission someone had betrayed to the Dreads. Another mission with Cassandra. Were Dreads hitting other operations too? He turned to Tella, finding her lost in thought, and remembered what he wanted to ask her. Angel in Chains. Was that song inspired by a dream? Her eyes widened.
Yes. How did you know that? Nobody knows that.
I didn't know, he returned. That's why I asked. I suspected. The imagery struck me that way. What did you see, if you don't mind?
I have these really vivid dreams sometimes. Startling, really. This one was more real than most. It was so odd. An angel in shadow, wings and all, stood on a spot of mud in the rain, staring at all these picture frames scattered around him. He was sad and felt guilty. Wherever the rain fell on the pictures, it turned to blood. It was as if the angel felt bad for staring at the pictures, and he kept turning to the sky, scared for when the clouds might clear and the stars find and accuse him. His emotion was so strong I woke up crying. Sounds silly, I know.
Not at all, Tella. You have a gift. There's nothing silly about it.
That's what my dad used to say. Are you sure you didn't know him?
I didn't. She settled into the seat, her face oddly content, even happy for a kidnapped victim.
So where are we going?
We're meeting up at a cemetery. Her eyes narrowed.
Why?
Lots of places to hide,